Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. Julio Diaz hosts Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock tomorrow here on News Radio, and also the Pensacola Movie Club. You can follow them on Facebook. They watch movies and talk about it. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. I'm just wondering if I get some kind of, like, certificate of participation on that Marconi Award since I have a show on the station.
You can say however you want to say. Hey, you have been with me since the beginning almost for 10 years now, so absolutely you get an element of contribution. You get an associate producer credit. How about that? Okay, so Terrifier 3 is the big movie this week. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is... this character, Art the Clown, that is the lead, the bad guy, the new, he's the new Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger. He has become like this new horror icon over the last couple of years. And it's kind of an interesting story because this is not a big studio project. This is a little independent film.
Yeah, I've never heard of this series or this person, so I'm captivated. Go on.
If you go into Spirit Halloween right now, you're going to see a big animatronic of him, and you're going to see lots of costumes and everything. He's become, he's becoming a new icon. And actually, that's something we're going to be discussing in a near future episode of Let's Go Pensacola,
okay.
In fact. Art the Clown is the killer of this very, very gory and over-the-top horror series. These movies are not for everybody, but for the people that love them, they are very well-received. And actually, this one's getting good reviews, too. It's running in the near 80% range on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
It's actually going to be a good week to go to the movies this week because pretty much everything is like in that range this week.
And I take it back. I did look it up. I have seen him, but I don't know the series at all. So, okay.
Yeah. It's definitely not for everybody, but if you are a fan, you're excited about this movie. And if you are a fan, hopefully you'll be excited to come to Pensacon in February 14th through 16th. We're going to have Art the Clown himself, the actor David Howard Thornton, who plays Art the Clown, and the creator of the franchise, Damian Leone, who's the writer and director of all of these movies.
Oh, fantastic.
So you get a chance to come meet them at Pensacon.
We've got several other movies, some of which look pretty interesting. Saturday Night, which is like the SNL thing, right?
Yeah, this is basically a dramatization of the 90 minutes before the very first broadcast of SNL went on the air, which apparently was filled with turmoil. In fact, almost did not go on the air. They almost booted up a Johnny Carson rerun instead of putting the show on the air. So,
and all of our lives would have been so much different.
and this is directed by Jason Reitman, who, of course, is kind of a sign-on of SNL. His dad, Ivan Reitman, was involved with everybody that was involved with SNL in the early days, really.
Right.
Great performances in this one, and again, running around 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The Apprentice, is this a biopic of what, Trump or something? What is this?
Yeah, this is about the early days of a budding New York land developer. I think his name was Ronald Trump. You might have heard of him. I'm not sure. So this is set. In the very young days of Donald Trump, so the early 70s.
Okay.
He's an older gentleman these days. But with Sebastian Stan playing Donald Trump, I know the campaign is up in arms about this movie, blah, 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 but the reviews are very good on it. Again, running around 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right. So it is meant to be accurate satire. What's the genre here?
I think that, it is something of a biopic. I think that probably does have a little bit of a satiric spin to it,
okay,
but not to where it's unfactual or anything like that.
Okay. Another in this sort of semi-genre, Super Slash Man, which is about Christopher Reeves. Is that right?
Yeah. Best reviewed movie of the week. We actually have a number of like true life stories this week, other than the Terrifier film. This is a documentary on the life of Chris Reeve, who of course we all know was the big screen Superman in 4 movies in the 70s and 80s, and then had a terrible accident and ended up paralyzed, but became this true life hero that did a lot of work for people with paralysis and is credited now for some people being able to walk from the research that he was able to inspire. Fantastic reviews on this one. This is the best reviewed movie of the week.
All right, we're totally out of time, but piece by piece?
This is a documentary as well, but it's done in Legos, and it's about the life of Pharrell Williams.
Oh, all right.
again, great reviews on this running in the 85% range.
Average Joe?
Not screened for critics. This is the faith-based movie of the week about a high school football coach who was fired for praying by himself.
Oh, okay. The Supreme Court case. Yeah. All right. And then My Hero Academia, which is an anime.
Yeah, this is the next, if you know this anime series, and again, if you're somebody that comes to Pensacon, you probably do because it's very popular, but another movie in this series of, they do movies as well.
And do you know what you're watching next week?
Not yet, but as soon as we do, we'll have it up on Facebook.
Follow them on Facebook, the Pensacola Movie Club. He will be doing Let's Go Pensacola tomorrow at 4 o'clock. No conflict with FSU this week. And he hosts both of those things and founded those things. Julio Diaz, as always, thank you for the time, sir, and we'll talk to you again next Friday. Oh, he sketched out on me on his cell phone. He said thank you. 8:15 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Now, why would a Brazilian Instagram influencer marry herself and then divorce herself and get canceled for it? We'll tell you next during the Transgressors Memorial Service. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
Brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. Just one accident on the books right now. East Olive Road and North Davis Highway. There's been an accident there. First responders are not on the scene, but they have been dispatched. So we'll keep you updated on that. Other than that, everything else looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
I'm Don Gates, and I stand with Governor DeSantis to stop illegal aliens from invading our state and draining our resources. I'll never allow illegals to get Florida driver's licenses, and I won't spend a penny of taxpayer money on illegals so long as there is one Florida veteran who needs our help or our care. Law enforcement is supporting me because I will give them the tools, the laws, and the backing to arrest illegals who commit crimes and get them out of our country. If Biden can't, or if Biden won't, then Florida must protect our borders and preserve the rule of law. And that's why I'm running for the Senate.
Don Gates, trusted conservative leadership, fighting for Northwest Florida. Paid by Don Gates, Republican for State Senate.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Hi, I am Jennifer Brer, your councilwoman for the City of Pensacola, District 1. It has been my honor to uphold my campaign promise to listen, respond, and represent our concerns at City Hall. I am a fierce advocate for our community and being fiscally responsible with taxpayer money, and it is always taxpayer money. Please re-elect me on November 5th and let your voice continue to be heard. Paid for by re-elect Jennifer Brer, City of Pensacola, District 1.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at George Stone Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from George Stone Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Although, and we must be honest about this, we can't even remember how many times we've had to cancel this particular enemy of wokeness. In the most current case, DeSantis has earned excommunication due to negative comments he made regarding electric vehicles in the preparation for Hurricane Milton.
If you have an electrical vehicle, just remember that if you have saltwater intrusion, particularly with storm surge, it can catch on fire, and that creates a major fire hazard, and it puts your home, if it's in a garage in your home, it puts your home in jeopardy of burning down.
No, you can't tell people that EVs will burn down their houses. He even told them that they needed to move their EVs out of the path of the storm surge.
Sure, but if you have an electric vehicle that you're getting it out of the range of any storm surge, get it to higher ground.
Oh, dear brethren, this will not do at all. All the hard work we've done pretending that EVs are wonderful and have no flaws, going up in sparks like a burning Tesla, all you could have predicted. As you could have predicted, the gas lovers and the climate deniers have seized on these comments to ridicule electric vehicles, including Dear Leader Biden's push for an EV mandate, by sarcastically noting that it's maybe not the best idea to require coastal communities to convert to vehicles that blow up 2 to 3 days after suffering saltwater intrusion. Of course we know this is a real problem. We've seen the impossible task of extinguishing flaming EVs to the point that firefighters sometimes just bury them in the ground until they go out. But talking publicly about it like this will do nothing but alarm short-sighted car purchasers in coastal communities and scare them off making the greenest of choices with their automobiles. In the grand scheme of things, what does it matter if a dozen or even 100 homes burn to the ground due to EV spontaneous combustion compared with saving the planet from burning itself to the ground because of climate change? Stopping the global climate apocalypse is far more important than avoiding a few home-destroying unquenchable lithium-ion battery fires. This is just as bad as when misguided reporters note that cobalt, a key ingredient in lithium-ion batteries, is mined by children in slave labor conditions. What's a little child slavery in comparison with saving the planet? The needs of the many far outweigh the needs of 40,000 10-year-olds in the Congo. And if we can ignore the plight of these children, we can certainly ignore a few random Florida garage fires. Florida itself is already such a raging dumpster fire. What's the difference with adding a few EVs to the inferno? Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, 36-year-old Brazilian influencer and model Sue Ellen Carey for getting divorced from herself. For those of you who don't remember this story from last year, the social media star with 400,000 followers on Instagram made headlines when she announced her decision to forsake the traditional norm of marrying another person in favor of seeking companionship and nurture, support, and fidelity from someone she could really build a life with herself. Labeling this profound commitment to self-love as sologamy or sologamy, as compared with monogamy or polygamy, she dove right into all the self-love she could endure. After a truly dazzling display of convention bending, which we adore, Sue Ellen sadly discovered that she really wasn't cut out for the independence of self-marriage, which she says turned out to be a lot more demanding than she'd imagined. She was unable to live up to her own high expectations for herself, which left her often feeling exhausted, lonely, and underappreciated. After 10 sessions at couples therapy, with herself and herself openly navigating their challenges and what a separation might mean, she decided she was no longer willing to remain faithful to herself. So rather than cheat on herself or ask for a trial separation or even consider trying an open sologamy, she has simply filed for divorce. Now, we certainly sympathize with Ms. Carey, who incidentally did not change her name in the marriage, and we realize she is only doing what is best for herself. But the problem here is she's brought ridicule upon what we believe to be a completely viable alternative lifestyle, thus diminishing the entire holy acronym string and making it harder for sologamists everywhere to receive the acceptance and inclusion they so obviously deserve. By divorcing herself, Sue Ellen has made it seem as if self-mating, or the SM in LGBTQ2SIA-SM, not to be confused with sadomasochism, another equally viable SM, is not a genuine alternative. Sadly, this selfish act of splitting up with herself makes it seem like auto-betrothal itself is to blame. Almost as if unigamy, or selfing, or me-spousing, or flying solo in a plane built for two is somehow less inadequate or inferior to other more traditional forms of conjugal bliss. So for bringing disrepute upon the bonds of holy self-amony and thereby undermining the general cause of advancing our pansexual anything other than traditional marriageism, Sue Ellen Carey, we cast both you and your ex-wife, Sue Ellen Carey, out of the fold of eternal love and compassion, thus forever untying the knot between yourselves and us. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, let us all take a moment to celebrate the unity being demonstrated across all professional sports with the hashtag #TimeOutAgainstHate campaign. This first-of-its-kind educational crusade... This first-of-its-kind educational operation has brought together the leaders of Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, is too a real sport, the NBA, the NFL, the WNBA, the NHL, the National Women's Soccer League, also a real sport, and NASCAR, to create ads that will air during broadcasts of all these sports, some of which obviously are never actually shown on television, to encourage Americans to take a timeout on hate. Since, as the campaign will declare, hate is winning, viewers will be encouraged to simply and profoundly make the T sign of a timeout signal with their hands whenever they encounter any form of hate, from anti-Semitism to anti-blackism to anti-acronymism to anti-womanism to anti-Islamism, not against anti-whiteism, anti-manism, or anti-Christianism, obviously. Just think of all the years we had to live with this hatred when we could have just been making the timeout gesture at the haters. So many wasted centuries when such a simple approach could have averted so much tragedy. Just as a team that's losing a game calls a timeout to change the momentum, we as a society can take a timeout on being racists until, one can speculate, it's safe to resume being racist again? Now, of course, I admit, along with the critics of this new plan, that it won't actually do anything. But that's not the point. The point is for us to feel good about our show of pretending to want to solve the issue. That's what really matters. Obviously, since we believe racism is at the very heart of every modern American institution, including professional sports, we're well aware that these racist sports barons are not going to voluntarily do anything that eviscerates their power by actually tackling the racism at the base of it. So the very fact all these leaders are willing to do this must mean it's meaningless. But we can pretend. We can feel good. We can make the timeout symbol together and imagine in our heads the flutes and the tambourines playing in our fantasy sports field of inclusion daffodils and heart-shaped finger lilies. So good for you, professional sports, for finally using your power, not for good itself, but to at least give us the feel-good illusion of thinking we're doing something that matters. Virtue signaling at its very finest. Well done. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Refreshments this week are provided by G-Wiz, the makers of high-potency electrolyte replacement vitamin drinks made exclusively from filtered and recirculated urine. Taking a lesson from preppers and survivalists, the chemists at G-Wiz realized that so many vitamins and nutrients are shed while talking to a man about a horse that repurposing all that reclaimed human effluent could be a delightfully flavorful natural alternative to Gatorade and help mitigate the aquifer depletion crisis the world may soon face. Now available in refreshing tangerine, tangy lemon-lime, and unsweetened original flavor. Gee whiz, you can really taste the virtue.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
Tangy lemon lime. 8:28 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. John Pickens, if he can manage to pull himself together, has traffic on the fives. John?
Natural flavor. East Olive Road and North Davis Highway, we've got an accident right there. First responders just arrived on the scene, so we're seeing some major delays. Other than that, traffic's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Somebody says they're going to start carrying the referee whistle around whenever they make the timeout sign to bad behavior so they can blow the whistle too. Oh, my goodness. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
All right, gee whiz. Opening statements start next week in the murder of a tech executive in California. Jury selection ended Thursday. 12 jurors will hear the case against Nima Momini, who's accused of stabbing Cash App founder Bob Lee last year. His sister was allegedly involved with Lee. Court records claim the two men had an argument before the murder. The IRS vowing to expedite $10 billion in delayed pandemic aid to businesses hit by recent hurricanes. The agency said 400,000 claims are now being processed for eligible business owners. And some happy news. Donald Trump's youngest daughter is pregnant.
She's an exceptional young woman, and she's going to have a baby, so that's nice.
The former president giving a speech in Detroit on Thursday when he made that announcement. It would be his 11th grandchild.
Oh, man, that's congratulations. That's fantastic. We do have a report of a vehicle crash with roadblock west of Davis on Olive, just west of Davis on Olive. So I appreciate that tip for us. Hey, if you're thinking about buying or selling a home and you want a good realtor because you want somebody who's got expertise, who can carry the process all the way through to closing and navigate any roadblocks or hurdles or speed bumps that you might, or whatever road analogy you want to use, before you get all the way through to closing, you want somebody who's got experience because that's what gives you the ability to get past all that stuff. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty sold 175 homes last year, 130 so far this year, and that number, of course, continues to climb. But they know what's normal. They know whether you do or don't have to replace the roof when you're selling. They know whether you do or don't have to replace the water heater or the air conditioner or anything else that you might not know about because you're not sure what the market's been doing. With shifting insurance marketplace, definitely those are things you've got to get a good expert opinion on. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. Also, come join us at Cordova Mall by the Best Buy. We're raising money for the Salvation Army in conjunction with Channel 3 and Cat Country for the victims of hurricanes here in Florida.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. There's a lot of cleanup to do as people forced from their homes by Hurricane Milton Wednesday are able to go back. Florida Division of Emergency Management Director Kevin Guthrie on Fox.
We had over 100,000 people, or right at 100,000 people, sheltered yesterday. The number I just got as we came online was about 13,000 were sheltered overnight. So that means that roughly 85,000 people are already heading back to their homes.
At least 17 deaths are confirmed. Hundreds have been rescued. 12 people are rescued from an old gold mine, now tourist attraction, after 6 hours in Colorado. There'd been an elevator malfunction with a different group on board. One person was killed.
Once they were able to identify that there were no other issues that could cause a problem with the equipment, they were able to lower it back down without anyone in it and then bring it back up to make sure that it was going to run correctly.
Teller County, Colorado Sheriff Jason Mikesell. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. Sunny and 65 right now in Pensacola. The Gulf Breeze doctor accused in the pill mill case now facing a total of 50 felony charges. Those charges range from murder to money laundering. FDLE agents raided Dr. Eileen Sharp's office back in June of 2023. She was arrested earlier this month. A report says 40 of her patients died of overdoses between 2017 and 2023. An independent medical review showed that two of those overdose victims would not have died if they hadn't been overprescribed oxycodone. The report also said Dr. Sharp was not certified in pain management and didn't know there was a specific certification for it. 10 alleged co-conspirators have also been arrested in the case. Dr. Sharp is due back in court October 24th. Two teen brothers arrested in a murder near Fairfield Drive. That was earlier this month. Deputies say the teens had followed Walter McQueen Dukes to a home after a minor car accident October 2nd and then shot him several times. 16-year-old Andre Harley and 18-year-old Anthony Harley were arrested at their home in Santa Rosa County. They're now charged with homicide and tampering with evidence in the case. The investigation into that bank robbery continues. PPD says it happened near Penn Air Credit Union on Airport.
I don't believe that there's been any incidents there before. Hopefully there won't be again. But, yeah, we're still working on that and hope to get some answers soon on that.
That's Pensacola Police spokesman Mike Wood. And he says they're still looking for any information that could lead them to a suspect. The suspect was described as either a white or Hispanic male who walked in, demanded the money while wearing a mask. Wood says he did not display a weapon, but did claim to have one when he demanded the money. Big exhibition game happening this weekend in downtown Pensacola. FSU and Auburn, their baseball team, is squaring off at the Blue Wahoo Stadium. That's a game that's years in the making. Now, unfortunately, if you didn't get a ticket early, like in the first hour, it's already sold out. But Mayor D.C. Reeves says even if you can't get inside, you can still go down and enjoy the atmosphere.
The parking lot at the Wahoo Stadium opens up at 9 a.m. They're going to have a tailgating set up there with a big screen, and that's all free. So if you want to just be down there during in the atmosphere, you can do that.
And there will also be a flyover prior to the game. Starting pilots from the U.S. Navy's Training Wing 5 at Whiting Field will pass over. And those pilots also have ties to both FSU and Auburn. Well, Tampa International Airport is open again today.
We sustained some damage to the airport.
albeit more cosmetic damage. We dodged a bullet with this storm. We didn't get the storm surge that we were initially expecting to get.
John Tilikos heads up Tampa's airport operations. They reopened at about 7 o'clock this morning. Southwest Florida International Airport and Orlando also reopening today. Palm Beach, they're still assessing the damage and haven't announced exactly when that will be reopened. And it is 8:35 now at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John.
That's right. We've got a vehicle crash with roadblock on Olive west of Davis Highway. So be prepared for that. That is causing a major delay. I'm seeing about a 20-30 minute backup on that. So you really want to plan around that. Other than that, I-10, I-110 looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Plenty of sunshine today with a high near 80 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58 degrees. For Saturday, nice sunny skies, high near 78. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 61. Rounding out the weekend with plenty of sunshine, high near 82 and a low near 65. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEART Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. We've got 66 degrees in Pensacola, 64 in Gulf Breeze, and it's 60 in Milton. And your money now. Markets today are mixed. The Dow is up 177 points at 42,631. S&P 500 is up just over 5 points, 57.85. The NASDAQ down 72 points at 18,210. Well, opening statements start next week in the murder trial of a tech executive in San Francisco. Jury selection ended Thursday. 12 jurors will hear the case against Nima Momini. She's accused of stabbing Cash App founder Bob Lee. Former President Trump going after the Biden-Harris administration on the economy after some poor reports. The Consumer Price Index, a barometer of inflation, rose more than expected in September. Initial filings for unemployment benefits also went up last week.
Under Biden and Harris, because of inflation, the economy has been a total disaster. But Kamala says that she can't think of one thing that she would do differently.
And that from the Detroit Economic Club yesterday, Trump also discussed the White House keeping inflation higher than when he was in office. Tesla taking the wraps off their robo-taxi yesterday. CEO Elon Musk showed off the company's CyberCab concept vehicle. It was at an invitation-only event at the Warner Brothers studio in Burbank, California. 8:37, our next news at 9. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
When hurricanes are brewing and heading to the Gulf, tune in to News Radio Pensacola for complete storm coverage you can count on. We have direct reports from the Emergency Management Center and from the National Hurricane Center to give you the latest on the storm's path, strength, and impacts. Stay informed and stay safe with comprehensive hurricane coverage heard on News Radio Pensacola. Now on 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, and on our News Radio Pensacola mobile app.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the end of the week, so I've got a couple of friends here in studio. Well, I call them friends. I don't know if they want to admit to it. John! Dude!
messed up his joke.
Oh. John's like just randomly punching buttons on the board over there. anyway, I hope they'll both admit to it. But Josh Newby, who is the executive director of the Council on Aging in West Florida, who I consider a very dear friend.
A close personal friend, agreed.
Yeah, one of the few people I can say I've been in your house and you've been in my house.
Yeah, we have.
Wow. And by Kimbrel, who is also a dear friend. I haven't been in his house. Well, yeah. I have been to the camp.
Yeah.
It's close. It's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, I don't live there. But yeah.
He's right. He's the director of the Alfred Washburn Center and still run the Stoshi Forest, right? John Zappos? Yeah. Okay. And you're in a band.
I am.
Let's give you some free advertising. You guys are going to...
Yeah, we're playing
tomorrow night at the Handlebar, my band's name is Popper's Grave, which kind of goes fitting with, you know.
Like Karl Popper?
No, like Prince and the Poppers.
Oh, the other one.
Okay. Good old Handlebar.
I got real excited about like science and epistemology there for a second. So
this is the Handlebar we're talking about.
Yeah. Misfire by me. I'm sorry. All right. Let's start with the camping ordinance. That's partially why I wanted to have you on, Michael, because, of course, you're one of the most well-known advocates for the homeless in our community that is unaffiliated with any of what I would call the large organizations.
Yeah,
which
our nonprofit industrial complex. Yeah.
Well, we personally support Man. We personally support Loaves and Fishes. We personally support Waterfront and are big believers in them. But I know you come from a different perspective, and that's why I always value your voice on this. I didn't watch the meeting last night, except for the part that had to do with us in the tower. We'll get to that on Monday. But I guess they passed I thought there was just the one camping ordinance,
Yeah, so they passed two last night. One was prohibiting on private property, and the other one was prohibiting public property.
Okay, so the public would be to align us with the state law. The private property totally bans camping on any commercial property. It allows camping on residential property with the owner's permission. A point of clarification that I'm sure came up last night, but they did pass it. Any changes made so far?
No changes, but there were. They said that they were going to tweak it, which I always think is kind of bad governance to not see the actual bill before voting on it. You know, and
agreed.
Seeing changing the ordinance at second reading is always a big disappointment because we don't really know what we're facing.
Right? Yeah, I would rather get the right thing passed on the second reading, but I would rather have the right verbiage there in the first reading, or at least have a very early release of the revision so that you really know what you're talking about. I totally, because changing it on the spot on second reading, especially because the public can't then comment after changes are proposed, is, not great governance.
Yeah, there were changes made from the Monday night agenda to Thursday night's meeting that I was unaware of until I watched the meeting. And that was that they removed sleeping in your car off of the ordinance.
Oh, well, that's great news.
It is. It's that's wonderful good. News.
That had been, of all the things that concerned me about this, that was the one that troubled me the most. Because that seemed to criminalize simply being homeless where you have a car, and also the worry about uneven enforcement of people who might be traveling through or whatever. So that got removed from the ordinance?
It did.
And it's
not on HB 1365 either. So we were actually making our ordinance stricter than the state law.
Yeah. That's great news. I want to come back to you on this, Josh, thoughts about the anti-camping ordinance that the city's now first reading passed?
Yeah, I've been following this since it passed in Tallahassee. And I'm curious, maybe you know, I don't. Was there any pushback when it was moving through the legislative process? Because my understanding is that it was largely passed in secret and under the continuum of care legislation, that no one really knew what the actual impacts would be until it had already passed. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
I remember this being pretty hotly debated because we were
really?
Well aware that it was coming once it got passed. But I may...
We're talking about HB 1365.
Yeah,
we were very adamant against it.
Okay, I was mistaken on that. I remember it coming down to the local level because it was an unfunded mandate initially, right? They had taken the continuum of care dollars away in order to enforce this, and then they had left it essentially up to the local communities, right? To
figure out enforcement,
mandate.
To Correct. Provide for law enforcement, and then of course the option of providing for a camping area, maybe. There's still been no discussion about that, right, in Escambia County?
Not that I am aware of. There have been meetings on how to approach local government to ask for that kind of assistance because this is a emerging crisis that is coming, and we need them to put some skin in the game. You know, I am a proponent for them leasing an agency property so we can have somewhere for people to go, but it was a very unpopular opinion.
Well, the other thing I was thinking about is having to do with camping in a commercial property. The mayor wants to put the tiny huts. I'm calling them that. That's not the pallet homes or whatever. The very small, 70 or 80 square foot, semi hurricane resistant portable shelters or semi portable shelters, and as available using ARPA money to put them. Like on the back lot at Waterfront kind of thing. So it's a low barrier shelter is kind of the idea, as I understand it. Would that not be prohibited by the camping, or that's not camping?
So my understanding is that's not camping.
Okay.
But the ordinance has a clause in it that allows for permission granted by either the mayor or an emergency declaration for a nonprofit to be able to do those types of relief efforts with campgrounds.
Okay, but is that only when you have a hurricane, or is that on, like, regular?
That was my understanding.
Oh, okay.
They seem to think that it was a hurricane-level event, but that our current, what we consider a crisis and an emergency with our homeless situation, is not an emergency in their eyes.
So you go ahead, Josh.
What defines camping? Is it the duration of the stay? Is it the type of structure? I'm still confused.
There's a
on
cluster
that.
Of definitions that's why the taking out of the camp of sleeping in your car is important, because that one no longer is included.
Yeah, and it depends on which agency you're talking about. So when we were trying to get our permitting for Shitoshi Forest, it was originally through the Florida Department of Health, and they denied us a permit because their definition of camping campground was that it was for recreational purposes only, and they deemed that we were not for recreational purposes. Okay. And so it gets really in the weeds real quick on what is camping. But for this, it's essentially sleeping in a tent and covering yourself with any type of covering. It ranges from cardboard to a tarp or a tent.
So yeah, basically, I think non-permanent or non-semi-permanent.
Yeah, and
structure.
I actually thought the definition was fairly good, except for the fact that I disagreed with including cars because of the practical problems of including car sleeping as an enforceable. How is the community reacting to this? Are they freaked out? Are they think it's not going to get enforced? Like,
we're
post October 1st now, so
yeah, I think we have a mix of both. Okay. So we have a lot of people that don't believe that anything's going to come of this because they know that there's no services available and there's nowhere for them to go. But then there's also a lot of fear of what is going to happen. And I've seen that manifest in an increase in violence on the streets and things like that, with that, you know, that animosity and that anger and fear that people are feeling is starting to come to a head on the streets. And we're starting to see it more and more.
Okay. Well, that's kind of why I wanted to have you here, because I wanted to get, you know, your thoughts about how this is progressing. And of course, we'll keep watching and wait for the second reading and all that. We have the wrap. It's Josh Newby and Mike Kimbrell here in studio with me. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still dealing with that accident that happened on a crash with roadblock on Olive just west of Davis. I'm seeing some minor delays with that one. Also, I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much. Oh, by the way, we got a text in earlier. Just somebody said, have I covered the amendments yet? I've only covered the amendment for the abortion one, and not much in depth. I plan to next week. It's always frustrating to me when to cover these things because of early balloting and early voting and mail. You know, when do you do it? I don't know anymore. All right, back to you guys. By the way, Josh, congratulations. You got added to the list of names to be ignored by the governor
for people
who would be on the Escambia Children's Trust board.
Yeah, me and everyone else who was on the
What are we up
agenda?
To, like 15 or 20 now, yeah. And the governor has not acted to...
I feel good about my chances. Well, that and the empty UWF board seats as well.
Are there? I forgot. Yeah, I had not been thinking about that. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
But big discussion about the clawback of the funds for the CRA versus letting the Children's Trust have them versus doing an interlocal agreement.
Correct.
Where the Children's Trust would use them according to parameters defined by them and by the county.
Correct. So I'll just set the table here very briefly. And I initially was on one side of this, which is let ECT
keep it.
Yep. Exactly. But
I would have allowed it that or an interlocal. Both are common across
the
state.
Correct. But I think the argument that Commissioner May had this past week was compelling to me, because the argument is that so many of the ECT dollars are being used for these unnecessary programs. Swimming programs was the example, you know, primarily for white, middle-income, affluent kids. Commissioner May is in favor of the CRA clawback because the CRA primarily is home to
poor, disadvantaged black and brown kids.
So he doesn't want to take the money away from children. He wants to keep spending the money on children, but he wants to be able to define the area of town where that money is spent. And I have to say, let's separate the legality of a taxing organization being taxed themselves. I think that's a compelling argument.
Well, so it doesn't bother me the same way something else might. What bothers me is that then we're going to turn around and use it for sidewalks. Or cameras, or whatever. Which yes. I don't dispute that those are important public needs, but they're not children's trust fund needs.
Agreed. And I know Sheriff Simmons has been on the program and has touted the benefits of those cameras. And certainly, look, if kids are safe.
And I don't disagree. But that should come out of regular public safety funds.
Correct. And you could draw that tangential line anywhere. If kids aren't safe, they won't learn. True.
Right.
Well, if kids aren't well fed, they won't learn.
That's
right. If kids don't have a two-parent household, they won't learn. So where do you draw the line? It needs to be strictly education.
And my short version on this is that when we were voting, we were not voting for sidewalks and cameras. We were voting for programs that would help facilitate education for poor black kids.
And it's so interesting because Commissioner May brought up the advertising campaign and said that, on these flyers, you didn't have these middle-income kids who, go to Cordova Park and MB Cook. The advertising campaign used black and brown kids in the Brownsville and Myrtle Grove communities. And now that money isn't being spent on them. So it is a weird position Commissioner May finds himself in that he wants to spend the money on poor kids, but he's also okay spending the money on non-kids.
Right.
Basically.
Well, I'll watch that. I'm interested. But I did, since we're talking about vacant appointment seats, we had a seat that got filled last Friday. It's been 1 week. Actually, a little bit less because the announcement came in after the show. Ashley Hoffberger got appointed by the governor to the now 10 months vacant seat from Robert Bender, Commission District 4, as he got moved over to Supervisor of Elections, of course, when David Stafford left. I have a lot of thoughts about this choice, but I'm going to give you guys first crack at it. Michael, do you have a thought about Ashley getting appointed to this seat 1 month before the election? Two months after the primary?
Oh, no. It's definitely interesting, to say the least. I will say that she missed out on me shaming the county commission at, the last meeting. And so, I'll have to...
Direct it at her. Sorry.
Yeah, I'll have to step up to the next meeting and see.
Include her.
So give her a taste of, the poverty issues. Yeah. And so.
Of the Mike Kimbrell show?
Yeah. There you go.
I think it really... I mean... It goes without saying that that community being without direct representation for that long has been terrible. And I struggle. I try to be, Andrew, I try to be charitable to the other side, but I struggle to see this as anything other than a political move.
Well, let me give you a thought about that, because I actually agree. I think that because it's only a month out, it looks so bad.
Right.
That I think if the governor was trying to help her, he may have hurt her. Because it looks like political finger on the scale stuff. It looks like he's trying to give her an advantage as a Republican, which he clearly wants a Republican in that seat. And I don't think there was much chance that she was going to lose the election.
Right.
But I don't think this helps her. Mm. I think it gives Ron Helms something that he can campaign on as a Democrat, because look at this political injustice. That's what it looks like. And if he'd have done it right after the primary, there'd have been less kicking and screaming about that, because you could certainly make the argument that before the primary, he didn't want to pick between the Republicans. Sure. After the primary, this is likely to be the winner.
Sure.
We need to get this seat filled. Let's put her in there. And then it doesn't look quite as politically crass as it certainly looks a month out. On the other hand, okay, and this has been the way I've been talking to myself about it. This commission, they just can't be trusted with 18 cents to do the right thing. They're talking about trying to get this $90 million bond issue passed before the change of board, trying to get something done on OLF 8 and give what looks to everybody like almost a sweetheart deal or a sole source procurement is what it looks like.
Right.
Because they have put off, Beulah Town Center and Fred Hemmer for so long, and now they're just suddenly going to engage with this other company in a quick month or two. It looks like maybe the governor is saying, whoa. Let's get somebody in there who's not a part of this. Best case scenario, 3-person vote to move forward with a very bad rush decision is how I'm trying to read it. But does the governor see things on that level?
Exactly.
And who's advising him from here locally?
Does the governor himself make the appointments?
I mean, no idea.
Come on.
Yeah.
So I'm disappointed with his administration. And let's not forget, the seat has been vacant for 10 months.
A
very capable legislator, Jared Moore, would have done an amazing job.
Totally agree.
It's a dereliction of duty, I think.
And I said that back when Elvin McCormick's seat was not filled, but this is even worse for all of the. And again, for the first 5 or 6 months, it was terrible.
Right.
And then for a brief time when you had multiple contenders in the Republican Party, I thought it was justified to wait till after the primary. But then to wait another 2 or 3 months after the primary was terrible.
If I was in District 4 and I was a Republican, I would almost want to vote for Ron Helms just to spite the governor's obvious favoritism.
In your hypothetical world that you're a Republican
voter. Yeah, in which I'm both a Republican and a District 4 representative. Right. Yeah, two fantasies here.
The power of imagination is strong.
I'm just encouraging the District 4 Republicans out there.
8:55 here on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens got traffic on the 5. John?
Still dealing with that accident that happened with roadblock on Olive just west of Davis Highway. Just a minor delays through that area, so plan another route. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
All right, John. All right, so I'm going to bring up a question that I know Josh has a thought on. I think Mike also has a thought on. It's UWF has changed their welcome sign. I'm not from here. I've only lived here for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, 10 is a lot. It's longer than I've ever lived in a place before, but, you know, that's only 10 to some people because, you know, my ancestors didn't come from here, so I'm a newbie.
Mm.
Not your kind of newbie.
Hey-o.
But so I liked the hedges.
Yeah.
I mean, PCA has hedges. Their hedges look nice. Yeah. I like it. It's quaint.
Do you remember when they had a new fight song a couple years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That was a banger.
It was not great. but now the hedges are gone. For a couple of months, they've been gone. And they've got this concrete...
Brutalist.
It's a brutalist wall.
Yeah.
I want to support. I want to be... Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of artistic and beautiful and colorful and ornate and, you know... Ashton Howard is a local artist, and you have other people who do great local art. There's all kinds of things we could have done.
Yeah.
But we got concrete and the Nautilus, and I'm thinking, oh.
I try to be, people don't like change, and I don't like change either.
Agreed.
And I'm a two-time alumnus of UWF, but UWF.
You two-time in Argo.
That's right, baby. but UWF really prides itself on, while it is a university, it is a commuter school.
Yeah.
It is a community school, more so than your UFs or your UCFs.
Exactly.
And I think that if the sign had leaned into those local connections more, it would be much more well-received. And, yeah, it just looks like generic university sign now.
I agree, and it's unfortunate because I want to be open to things, especially, as you say, to change.
Right.
But I'm... not a fan, at least not yet. And it's not done.
Do we know when it will be?
I don't have a timeline.
Okay.
I figure it looks like it's going to be within a month. It looks pretty close.
Yeah, yeah.
I drive past there all the time because I take a kid to school. One of the other things I wanted to talk with you guys about is the hurricane obviously was the huge news of the week, where we had, now it looks like 17, and I'm sure that number is going to be higher, people who died, lots of rescues, you know. The surprise of the storm being that it wasn't the surge.
Right.
It was... You know, we always say it's not the wind, it's the surge. Well, this time it was not the surge and it was the wind. Mm-hmm. And then it was the tornadoes from the wind. We haven't had one since Sally. And we've had Floridians pride themselves on, you know, adamant indifference, you know, storm, you know, whatever.
Right.
What would happen in your community if we had a real storm? What happened in Sally and what would happen if we had one again, Michael?
So if we, Sally... We did our best to get people to shelters. I mean, I drove around until the power started going out around town, taking people to shelters. But if we had something that was on the level of Michael, it would be devastating to people that were unsheltered.
What happens to homeless people in these scenarios? I mean, if the base center is open, they still have barriers, right? You can't. I mean, there's still issues plus transportation, right?
Yeah. One of the biggest ones is transportation. They always open the shelters at the last minute, and there isn't time for us to get everyone
to round them up and get them there, sure.
Or to even notify them that the shelters have opened. And then next is whether they can have pets or, you know, all the other barriers that are attached. So... a lot of people just find a place to hunker down. One of my favorite stories is I had a friend of mine who went by Julio, and he refused.
Got about 30 seconds, by the way.
He refused to ride by the ride to the shelter and stayed next to a red box at a Walgreens. Mm. And so he was the first person I checked on after Sally. And he was just like, man, it was so beautiful. There were sparks flying everywhere as the telephone poles came down. And I was just like, yeah, that doesn't sound beautiful, man. But, you know, and so.
Well, you lived and we'll take that. But yeah I just. I know we're as prepared as we can be, but I'm also concerned that people don't prepare themselves.
Local Talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio.